Okay, time once again for the movie retrospective. This time around, we are doing not only one of my favorite anthology movies, but also another one that our good friend Rob sent us a DVD of it.
I had never seen this movie.
Yes, Tom had never seen it, even though this came out in 1983. This is Twilight Zone, the movie. I saw this a million times when I was a kid. I mean, this was on cable all the fucking time. I think, like, we taped it on VHS. I must have seen it. Oh my God, I must have seen it at least 100 times.
It's an excellent movie.
And every time it came on, I would watch it again.
It's an excellent movie. Every story on it is good. It came from the old Twilight Zone series, you know, that I grew up with. And they slightly changed it. They reboot it. So the endings on each one of them are a little bit different. That way you don't really know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
But, I think Kick the Can, the ending is about the same.
I think the ending of that one was the same, yeah. Now, three of these stories were remakes of some original Twilight Zone episodes. The first one was the one with Vic Morrow, which we'll get into that in a little bit because that's kind of a famous thing because of the horrible thing that happened on set. But I think that was the only original story. The other ones were remakes from the original series. Now, this was done by Steven Spielberg and John Landis. They were the producers on it. Spielberg actually directed the Kick the Can segment. John Landis did the first segment. And then Joe Dante did the third one, which was like the kid that could wish people into the cornfield. But it was like an updating of that. And George Miller of Mad Max fame did the last one, which was the one with the man on the wing of the plane.
Yeah.
Which originally, the original one had William Shatner in it, huh?
Yeah.
This one has John Landis.
Yeah, that one ended about the same too, I think.
I think it did also.
They just showed more in this one.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
There's also like some little Easter eggs because the narrator, because obviously by the time they made this, Rod Serling was dead. So the narrator, this is actually Burgess Meredith, who was actually in a whole bunch of Twilight Zone episodes back in the day. Also, you know, the kid, like, in the original It's a Good Life, the kid that would wish everybody into the cornfield in the old black and white one, Bill Mumy, he was actually had a cameo in that segment. Like, I think he was one of the guys in the diner, like, where Anthony's playing Tempest, like, on the video game, and he's gonna kick the kid's ass or something like that. So they put, like, people from the original show in here, too, but, like, in little cameo roles, which I thought was kind of cool. Now, one thing that I always loved about this, I swear to God, I can't hear, and every time I see this movie, that fucking Creedence Clearwater Revival song is, like, stuck in my head for, like, weeks and weeks afterward, Midnight Special. Mm-hmm. And that's how you always knew that this fucking movie was coming on, which is, like, the first strains of, like, Midnight Special coming on, and then you got fucking Dan Aykroyd and Albert Brooks in a car, like, singing along to it. And I used to, like, even though it takes a while for that to build up, because they just, like, go on this big, long thing where they're, like, they're playing a TV theme songs game and shit, because they're on a road trip or whatever. And it's just, like, there's something that I really, really like about that opening prologue, just with the two of them in the fucking car, and then listening to Creedence Clearwater, then they're, like, singing along for, like, 5 minutes or whatever. Yeah. Then the tape breaks, and then they're like, hey, you want to play TV theme songs? And then they're, like, fucking, you know, the shit with them, like, singing along with the song, it's like, you know, and all this other kind of crap. When he was doing, like, the National Geographic theme and putting words in there to give him a hit.
For me, what stood out in the movie was Scatman Crothers. I thought seeing him, you know what I mean? I didn't expect him to be in it, but seeing him in the movie fucking was like, oh yeah, it's pretty cool. Because he's an old school, you know, musician going all the way back. He's playing in speakeasies in the 30s, but he does a really good job. Kind of, and then another, the one with the gremlin on the wing.
Yeah, the fourth one.
I think that's the best story in the compilation, the best rendition of it.
Yeah,
the one with the kid who can wish people out in the cornfield. I liked that version of the story in this one, but it wasn't as good as the original. In terms of, okay, well, the special effects were a lot better.
Yeah,
a lot better. But they redeemed the kid in the end in this one. And no, you shouldn't have redeemed the kid.
I don't even remember what happened at the beginning of the, or at the end of the
in the original, the kid won.
Yeah, he did, didn't he?
Yeah.
I haven't seen that in a long time.
The kid won, yeah. The kid he won,
was basically and
everyone else remained under his power, and that's basically how it ended.
Yeah. I guess they wanted more of a character arc.
Yeah, I guess so. Or for some reason they wanted to redeem the kid, which that is kind of like clipping the nuts off that story. The reason why that story was so scary is how hopeless the situation was.
Yeah, because, like, what the fuck could you do if you were, like, under the sway of, like, a little kid that could do absolutely anything he wanted?
Yeah, and he had made his town vanish into a parallel universe. Nothing else existed, just his town.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty weird, you know?
that is pretty scary.
Yeah, and he had godlike powers.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it was a good movie.
Yeah, it's like, I feel like, for me, it's like, all of the stories are good. It's weird because I hadn't seen this, like, I saw it a million times when I was a kid, but then I hadn't seen it for probably 20, 25 years. And when we saw it again, I could have sworn there was 5 stories, but there's only 4. I guess maybe I was thinking of Creepshow, because that has 5 stories. But I feel like all the stories are good, but the last two are my favorite. Like the ones with the one with Anthony and the man on the wing of the plane.
Yeah, and the first story was just kind of generic throwaway story.
Now, the first one was the only one that wasn't a remake of something else.
Yeah.
Now, what ended up happening with, because we got to go into this, and Rob even like sent me a message. It's like, that could be a whole episode on its own. So the first episode, which is, you know, about this cranky asshole who sounds like my grandpa, or did, because my grandpa's dead. But, and he kind of gets his comeuppance because he's just like, Jew this, and N-word that, and spear chucker this, and you know what I mean? So he kind of gets sent back in time to, like, Nazi Germany, and then he gets sent to Vietnam, and he gets all this other stuff. And, you know, so you would think that he would, like, learn a lesson and stuff. Well, what ended up happening with this? Now, while they were on set, they didn't shoot this in Vietnam, obviously, but while they were shooting it, apparently John Landis, who directed this episode, and look, I love John Landis, I love An American Werewolf in London, stuff like that, but this is some fucked up shit right here. So they were shooting, like, really late at night, and there were these two kids, like, two child actors, because there was supposed to be a sequence in this episode where, you know, the cranky asshole, like, saves these two kids, like, from a bomb or from getting shot or something like that, which was kind of like a redemption for him, right? So they were shooting that scene in the middle of the night, and they had these two little kids, and John Landis apparently said that they'd hired these two kids under the table because under California labor law, you can't have, like, two little kids working this late at night, like, without a tutor or anything like that. So he was circumventing those laws because he wanted this scene shot. So that's what he was doing. And what ended up happening was that, so they weren't being super careful. Apparently, one of the guys who was doing, like, the pyrotechnics, because it was supposed to be, like, a big explosion and all this other shit, he wasn't really watching what he was doing either. And then, like, he set off the pyrotechnics either too early or he set off two of them together and they were supposed to be separate. And it caused a helicopter to crash. The helicopter beheaded Vic Morrow, the actor who plays the cranky asshole in this segment, and beheaded one of the kids and crushed the other kid under a helicopter. Now, to save a few bucks. Now, famously, not only did this cause a huge rift between Steven Spielberg and John Landis, I mean, Steven Spielberg ended his friendship with John Landis over this because he said, you know, nothing is worth dying for, like saving a couple bucks or like making a movie. And that's like, he was like horrified by how John Landis had covered it. But this also resulted, rightfully so, in a whole bunch of lawsuits. Yeah. Now, that John Landis, as well as a few of the other people who were working on the crew that had been, you know, instrumental in, like, hiring these kids and everything, were actually brought up on manslaughter charges. However, in the end, it was found to be just, like, an accident. And even though they were kind of liable for hiring the kids and everything like that, it wasn't, you know, the fact that they'd hired these kids illegally, that didn't directly lead to the helicopter crashing that caused, even though the kids shouldn't have been there because they shouldn't have been working at that time of night because that's against the law.
That wouldn't have stopped the helicopter from crashing, though.
Right, and that, and it still might have killed the actor, but it's like the fact that the two kids were there too. It's like, you know, that kind of made everything. So they, so he did actually get off with it, but a lot of people are still, still really don't like John Landis because of this, because they feel like he was directly responsible for the deaths of those two kids, at least.
That was just bad luck.
You know what I mean? Because, you know, because they were, well, apparently a judge agreed because no one was found liable. They said, look, it was just an accident. Yes, the two kids shouldn't have been there, and he was held responsible for that.
Yeah.
And he did come forward and say that he felt responsible for it and everything like that. But like I said, it's, you know, that's kind of the thing. So that, it's weird because the original Twilight Zone, pretty much every story was like a morality tale.
Yeah, but not that first one.
But the first one was kind of not because, I mean,
happens.
At the end of it, it's basically he's just taken off in a cattle car, like presumably to, you know, a
to
a concentration camp.
Right.
And he doesn't, I guess he learns a lesson like, oh shit, I shouldn't have been such a dick to people. But the reason that it's truncated like that is because there was supposed to be
a
redemption scene where he saves these two kids from a bombing in Vietnam, and then that was supposed to be like he learned his lesson or whatever. But because they didn't, there was some footage, and apparently this is horrible, and I'm sure it's probably on YouTube. Please don't search for it. But apparently there is footage of the accident and Vic Morrow and the kid getting beheaded because they shot it from three different angles.
Yeah.
So the footage is out there somewhere. They had a bunch of footage of him and the kids and the whole like lead up to this sequence, but after that happened, he didn't want to use any of the footage of the kids that they had already shot, you know, understandably so. So they had to, like, cut out that whole sequence, which is why that first one seems like it ended kind of, I don't know if it ended abruptly, but it just seemed like there should have been more, like, more to it. Like, he should have really kind of realized more.
Yeah, that's, I didn't like the first one because, like you said, it didn't, it, the story didn't really end.
That, but that's
that,
why.
That was not, that's why, I just call it kind of like a throwaway story. I remembered that somebody got killed, but I didn't realize the which story it was.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, that wasn't really in the spirit of Twilight Zone. Twilight Zone would present a problem and then they would resolve it.
Yeah. You well, know, like I said, it was
really
supposed to. It was supposed to.
Twilight
it's
Zone,
just
Twilight Zone episodes were usually some kind of morality tale.
Yeah.
And that first one wasn't. The other ones were.
Yeah. And the other ones were the ones that were remakes from the
original. Yeah. Although, I think the one about the kid at the cornfield, the kid in the cornfield one, what's the name of that episode? Do you remember?
It's a Good Life.
It's a Good Life. That's right. It's a Good Life. The original telling of that tale was ominous because it, the resolution was that there was no hope.
Yeah.
It was a fucking black pill. You know what I'm talking about? And that's what gave that story strength. To change it the way that they did the ending. That was a very positive and upbeat ending for that. For, you know, that's exactly the opposite of the original tale. Which they, you know, you could do that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure they didn't want to make it exactly the same.
Yeah, it's an artistic decision, but I liked it when that story was a damn black
pill. And you should, you know, you should note, too, that Joe Dante directed the third segment, and he was more known for his horror comedies, like Gremlins and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, you know, and, like, stuff that was heavy on special effects. You know, I feel like, I don't know, I feel like that one might be my favorite, just edging it out a little bit, just because I always really liked the atmosphere of it. I liked the inside of there's no cornfield, there's no nothing like that. It's just this house that's by itself. And, you know, the inside of the house is all this weird, like, lighting, and it's like this kid, and it's like, when I first saw it, I was probably only 11 years old. I don't think I had seen the original Twilight Zone episode.
Yeah.
I knew that there was one, but I didn't think I don't think I'd seen it. And so I didn't know, you know, when Helen, the teacher, when she brings Anthony back to this big mansion and all his family members are acting super weird, and those like all the weird food, like the hamburger with the peanut butter on it, and like, you know, they're all like really nervous around him.
Yeah.
And I didn't know why that was. So I was like really, really intrigued. And then like he takes her upstairs and they start going through all her shit. And then like taking all her cigarettes and shit like that. And I specifically really love the one shot, and it's just like a throwaway shot, but the shot where he's talking about his sister, oh, she was in an accident, and then they pull back and then she doesn't have a fucking mouth.
Yeah.
It's like, oh man, I love that. That used to creep me out so much as a kid.
Yeah.
But since I hadn't seen the original, I don't think the ending of it, like the more redemptive ending, bothered me as much, just because I loved the suspense of it, of not knowing why everybody in this house was acting so weird and why they all seemed to be afraid of him. And then, you know, and too, like the fucking special effects where he's, you know, he's telling his Uncle Walt to like pull a rabbit out of the hat. And you can just tell by his face, he's like, oh, fuck, man. Like he doesn't want to put his hand in there because he didn't know it's going to come out. Yeah. And then like this fucking, they have all this crazy, like cartoony, like Tasmanian devil kind of shit. It's great. It looks great still.
Yeah, it does.
The practical effects and stuff like that look fantastic.
The original, there's two different versions of It's a Good Life. There's a longer version that wasn't allowed to be shown on television, or later on they cut it out.
It's based on a book, I think, or on a short story.
Is it? Yeah. If you guys haven't seen It's a Good Life, it's probably on, I think, Netflix.
Netflix has most of the old Twilight Zones, right? I think.
And I don't remember which version of It's a Good Life is on there, but one, I've seen both versions, but I remember they stopped playing the original version on television after a while because they cut out a scene where I think he turns somebody into like a chaka and puts them inside the television and they're running from a big old dinosaur and the guy gets eaten by the dinosaur and then the dinosaur falls off the cliff. Something like that.
So they kind of homage that in the new one because he puts Ethel into a cartoon and then she gets eaten by a dragon.
They cut that out. They eventually cut that out of the later on TV version. I don't know.
Because they thought it was too upsetting.
Yeah. But if they could, they may have it on the Netflix version.
Back then.
Yeah. Well, in the 70s, at least, they did that. Because I remember in the 70s, it vanished in the late 70s.
Yeah.
Early 80s, it started to vanish. But I remember it being in there in the
70s. I don't even remember. Because, like I said, I might not have even seen that version because I didn't see the original Twilight Zone, It's a Good Life, until
later. We invented a
later.
Term, a chaka.
Yeah,
you came up with that, turned him into chaka, and then all of a sudden there. I always say, yeah, turn that motherfucker into a chaka. A chaka is a caveman or somebody who looks like
from Land of the Lost.
Yeah,
that was his name.
His name was Chaka.
His name was Chaka.
He's a little hairy ape boy.
Well, it amused me because when I was watching the thing, I was amused by the fact that that little ape man's name was Chaka. But then I thought, well, Chaka could just be a generic term. I like a Chaka.
It's not just you, though. In the Army, we used to call people Chaka every now and then. Call somebody
if
Chaka.
If they had a lot of body hair?
There was just, no, just sometimes, you know, like if a guy was slightly buck-toothed, you know what I mean? They might call him Chaka.
Oh, yeah, he was pretty buck-toothed,
he was a little bit
buck-toothed,
yeah, buck-toothed and gap-toothed. He was gap-toothed.
Yeah, that's right.
More than buck-toothed.
Holy shit, that makes me want to watch. Remember how, like, we watched the fucking Land of the Lost, like, some of the old episodes the other day?
Yeah.
I can't believe how fucking cheesy that shit is. Also, like I said, I can't believe the fucking sexual tension between the quote-unquote brother and sister. Okay, I know they're not really brother and sister, but
Holly
it's like...
Holly's getting ready to fuck that dude.
She was wanting to jump on that dick. Holy crap.
And how old was she? 13? 14, maybe?
Maybe. Hormones, man.
You could tell.
They work on girls,
she
too.
She could not hold it back.
I know.
She was like so
I didn't notice it when I was a kid, obviously, but it's like I was watching it now and I was like, holy
so
shit.
So obvious that she's totally into
holy
Will.
Shit.
She just can't even walk past him without being, you can see the magnetic force.
I know.
You know, pulling her.
You can see the estrogen coming
she's
off.
She's fighting
just
the
like,
magnetic force, you know.
It is. Definite. Go watch some of them on YouTube. Shit. You'll see what we're talking about. I couldn't believe it.
She's definitely reacting to that guy. And he's trying to play it off.
Yeah.
He's trying to ignore it.
He's much older than her.
He's trying to
ignore it. She might have been older than she looked, but I don't think she was all that old.
She was supposed to be 12.
Yeah.
But
I think she was a little, maybe.
I think she might have been 15, 16.
15, 16, yeah.
Something like that.
Which, that's not too crazy. I don't know how old he was. Now I'm going to have to go look that
shit. She was trying to fight it. You could see the gravitational fucking field.
It was so, so funny. We were just like all, because I was like, let's watch Lady of the Lost. I haven't watched since I was a little kid. And like, what we both said the same thing at the same time. We both
like,
fucking
she's
noticed
fucking
it.
Hot on that
like,
dude.
Look at that.
Yeah, she is hot on that dude. It just all the
it
fucking
hilarious.
Body language, fucking dilated pupils, and fucking she couldn't even fucking talk.
Yeah.
She could barely.
I mean, you might as well have seen her like little eyes go like.
She swooned every time she fucking saw the dude. She's swooning and shit.
It was crazy.
What you call Cousin Will or something like that? Or
I thought it was her brother.
Not, I think it was her cousin.
Oh, okay. Well, fair game.
But there wasn't supposed to be any tension there.
Well, yeah, like I said, they were supposed
thought
to
it might have been
they were supposed
cousin.
To be related. I thought they were brother and sister, but I might be remembering that wrong.
Yeah, I think you're remembering it wrong. I think Holly was I have to go back and watch it again.
Was he Marshall the dad?
Was Marshall the dad or the uncle?
Or the uncle.
I think she was calling him Uncle Will. I had to go back and look at it.
Shit,
another thing that I forgot is how quickly that series progressed.
But yeah, it was like all of a sudden Sleestacks.
And it all happened within like 8 episodes. And yeah. I'm like, well, shit, I thought I was watching that for years until that thing happened. You know, I had to go back and watch it again. And the episodes are very short and very simple.
Yeah, they're like 15 minutes long.
And they are entertaining, but they're very, very simple.
Yeah.
Very, very simple.
I thought they were funny. But yeah.
Before you know it, they're flying around in the pylons and shit. And I thought that took forever before they were.
I did too. I remember them like farting around with Chuck and the dinosaur for like a long time. Yeah. The big strawberries and everything.
When you're a little kid, 2 episodes, which is seems 2 like weeks, forever. Seemed like forever.
I guess so.
Yeah.
But yeah, we talked about the first one. We talked about the third one. Now, the second one is Kick the Can. This one was directed by Steven Spielberg, and it is easily the most Spielberg-y of all of the all of the stories. It's not as creepy. It's not as horror-oriented, like, I guess, but it's more like heartwarming.
Yeah.
But I kind of like that, though, because it kind of balanced out the other stuff. Because the first one was, like, kind of really unpleasant. And then the third one is kind of more like a sinister cartoon. Yeah. And then the fourth one is just like kind of a scary monster thing. Yeah. So they had like a nice magical, you know, a magical heartwarming one in there.
Well, a lot of the Twilight Zone episodes were heartwarming.
They were, yeah, now that I'm thinking about it.
It wasn't all scary.
I don't think I remember.
It's a lot more positive.
Because it says, according to Wikipedia, like, Kick the Can was also based on one of the original Twilight Zones. Although, I don't remember seeing that one.
I remember it.
You saw it?
Yep.
So it was? Okay, yep. Well, I must have just missed that one.
It was pretty close.
Yeah, I mean, you can't, fuck, man, you can't lose with Scatman Crothers.
I don't remember.
That dude was, like, the coolest.
I don't remember the Scatman Crothers traveling rejuvenator. I don't remember that character in the original. I just remember a kid that could kick the can.
And make everybody younger?
No, it was an old guy who was convinced that he could do it.
Oh, I did see that.
And then he started to act young, and he became young, and his friend saw that happen. And then he went in and he tried to explain to everybody else what had happened.
Okay.
And then towards the end, they all did get younger, and I think that's how it ended. Okay. They didn't go back to their normal age.
So I guess it was like slightly different than the original story, which is maybe
I haven't seen this.
Because this one is basically, you know, Scatman Crothers, and he plays Mr. Bloom. And apparently he's like, he just goes from rest home to rest home, you know, getting these old farts to play Kick the Can.
Yeah, and I don't think that character was in the original.
I don't think so either. Now that you, maybe that's why I didn't make the connection.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so he's getting to play Kick the Can, and because he's, like, got magic powers for whatever reason, they actually do get younger.
Yeah.
But
in the original, it was 2 guys, and one of them, I think, was just daring the other one. He says, do you realize maybe, you know, he goes, remember when we used to play Kick the Can? Shit, I guess that's some shit you did back in the fucking 1890s.
Yeah, I know. It was just like hoop and stick. You know what I mean? Well, I love it. Like, well, this was like, okay, so this came out in 1983. So like the people that were in the rest home of this were like, you know, would be old as well. They'd be dead now. But
yeah,
I mean,
the originals came out in the 50s. So they were talking about what, the 20s? No, not even.
Not even. It would have been way.
It would have been late 1800s kicking the can.
Well, even in this one, like, in the 1983 version, like, the 2 women that were talking about how their favorite game was, like, Jack's.
Yeah.
And I was like,
whoa, what era?
Wow,
is
that was a long time ago.
Yeah.
I
remember
so.
Jack's.
She was supposed to be, the one woman that said that was supposed to be 78 in 1983.
Well, when I was a little kid, little girls played with Jack's, and that was in the 70s.
I guess I did, too, when I was really little.
Bounce the ball and pick up the Jack's,
and there was
a certain amount of me.
I did have some, so maybe that wasn't, but it just seemed like the weird first thing to, like, go to.
It was an old game.
Whereas if somebody said to me, like, what was your favorite? Yeah, I had Jacks when I was a kid, but if somebody said to me, what was your favorite game when you were a kid, I probably would have said, like, fucking, I don't know, Play-Doh or Mystery Mansion or something like that. Or Legos.
I imagine millennials don't even know what Jacks are.
Yeah, it's like, I feel like that's, I haven't even seen them, like, in a store. Yeah. Not that I've looked, but yeah, so I think, like you said, in the original story, did they all stay kids?
I think they did.
Oh, because then this one they didn't.
I think it panned back, and then, you know, you'd have, you know, fucking what's his name, Rod Sterling, sitting there fucking smoking his ass off in that damn suit. You know what I mean? Going, you know, kid, you know, age is nothing more than, you know, They'd say some deep shit, you know, in the Twilight Zone.
Yeah.
You know?
I really did,
I think,
like,
they all became kids and they were in a damn, out in the backyard of the damn convalescent home running around playing, you know, as kids. I think the whole convalescent home turned into kids.
Yeah.
It was like contagious when one of them learned. And then the last one was a guy who kind of refused to become a kid again. I don't remember.
Yeah, they did that in this one too.
You're right.
There was one because there's always one. There was always one grouchy fuck that didn't want to become a kid.
I don't think they turned back. I don't think they turned back to old people.
See, in this one though, they played as kids for like a little while. Although it's weird because I hadn't seen this movie in a long time, and it's like I thought that they were kids longer. It's like it was basically just one night, and then they farted around as kids like for a little while, and then all of a sudden they were just like, wait, this sucks. They're like, we don't have any parents, and it's like, our lives sucked anyway. We don't want to go back to school, and it's like, let's be old again.
they had a bunch of them that were about kids. There was another one about some kids that would dive down into a swimming pool. Their parents were getting divorced, and they were kind of like real rich fucking California modern couple from the early 60s or the late 50s, and they're getting a divorce. And the little kids are unhappy about it, and they could dive down into the swimming pool. And they would go into another dimension and come up out into a lake where there'd be like Huckleberry Finn there and Country Kids.
I remember that one.
Remember that one?
I remember that
one. And eventually they said, fuck it, and they stayed over there. That's how I remembered it.
I don't know if I'd want to stay in Huckleberry Finn world.
Yeah, they stayed in Huckleberry Finn world. And I think...
It'd have to be a pretty fucking cool dimension for me to want to stay there.
Well, it was a lot better than what they had.
True.
Even though what they had was like living in like Beverly Hills.
Yeah.
Of the time, you know.
There's like, no thanks. We just want to walk around bare feet and catch frogs and paint fences and stuff.
Yeah. But I think they stayed young forever.
Because, you know. Oh, well, okay. That might be
a good
trade-off.
They stayed young forever in like a Huckleberry Finn world.
I don't know. I have to think about that one.
It was the values of the time.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I was trying to think about, like, because when I was rewatching Kick the Can just recently... And I'm sitting there going, one, I really like the message of it. Like I said, Scatman Crothers, he can do no wrong. I just love that fucking dude. He was just like the coolest dude ever. So and he can make anything sound awesome. You know what I mean? Yeah. So I really like the message of it. I mean, he was the perfect person to play this role because he comes off as like he was clearly like an older guy. But
Scatman's brother was born old.
Even like young pictures of him.
I went back and looked at old pictures. His pictures when he was young, he's still old.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was born old.
But because of that, maybe, you know, even though he's obviously an older guy in this, he still has that childlike wonderment type of thing. Like, because some old people have that. And so he really had that. So I think he really sold this role. So where he just, like, comes along and, you know, gets them all to be young again for a little while. So I really liked that message where it's just like, and, you know, you had the one, like I said, the grouchy old fart that's just like, I don't want to be all fucking young again, fuck that shit. And he was just kind of like that, and then ironically, like, after all the other, you know, kids like got, they decided they just wanted to be old again, but the one Mr. AG, he decided, because he was like Peter Pan and shit, and he decided he was going to stay young, and you know, and so the cranky old guy was like, oh well, now I want to go, and they're like, too late now, motherfucker, you should have gone before. But I like that whole message where it's just like, you know, even though you're, like, old as fuck, you can still, you know, you can still act like a young person, or you can still, like, have a youthful kind of thing about you. Now, let's talk about, before we end the review, let's talk about the last segment. Like I said, directed by George fucking Miller. God damn it.
Yeah, guy from Mad Max.
And you can tell, because this one's, like, action-packed.
Yeah.
So, like I said, this is probably the closest to...
To the original.
Yeah. I don't think they changed all that much.
No, they just showed more.
Yeah, because I think the original with the Shat... and I have to say that in this one, the man on the wing of the plane, or the monster, looks a lot cooler than the one.
He's calling down lightning onto the thing and fucking with the engines and throwing
stuff. Yeah, he was like all slimy.
In the engines.
Whoosh.
Yeah.
And I have to say, I mean, John Lithgow in this, he plays a fantastic crazy person.
Yeah, although
his eyes were just bugging out of his fucking head and shit like that.
If you haven't seen the original William Shatner, see that one too.
Shat was in it. Yeah,
the Shat fucking made his mark on Twilight.
Was he like throwing himself all around like?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. there's someone on the wing of the plane.
Yeah.
On the wing of the plane.
You need somebody that's, going to overact in this shit. Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know what I mean? You just need it for this type of thing, because...
Shat didn't overact. He was... That was the acting of the day.
That was his acting style.
That was the acting style of the day. You know,
I guess, he had kind of his own spin on it. He had his own spin on it.
People remembered him, though, and he was successful.
True.
He got work.
He did, yeah.
He got work. Got work even, you know... even after Star Trek, you know, he did Kingdom of the Spiders and shit like that. And we like those movies.
I love Kingdom of the Spiders. That's like one of my guilty pleasures. That and like Orca.
Yeah.
Like all those fucking 70s like nature disaster movies.
Yeah, and there would just
love
be
that shit.
Movies and fucking, you know, Shat would show up in a fucking made-for-TV movie. You know, he was a name.
He was in The Devil's
People
Reign,
forget
too.
That.
And his face melted off.
Yeah, people forget that, you know, he had a lot of work outside of Star Trek.
He was in a ton
of
shit.
He's just always going to be known for Star Trek. I mean, that changed culture.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that was his iconic role, sure.
Yeah, huge role.
It happened to Leonard Nimoy, too. But I mean, Leonard Nimoy had some other shit going on, too, because he had, In Search Of and other stuff. But, you know. But, so this last segment, like I said... Probably, I don't know. It depends on the day. I feel like the third one is maybe my favorite, or this one is maybe my favorite. I just love John Lithgow in this, and I can really relate to this hard because, I mean, as soon as this one starts, John Lithgow is in the fucking the tiny airplane bathroom, and he's just wigging the fuck out, his hair sticking out, his eyes are bugging out, and I said, "Hey, me on an airplane, yeah. not too far
I don't
off."
Understand.
I hate flying too, so I can get it.
They added a little girl character, which I liked that with her.
That little girl was funny.
I remember
delightful. And I don't like child actors generally, but she was she was so sarcastic and so deadpan, and but not in an over the top kind of way. You know what I mean?
Put the seatbelt on. Here so you don't fall. I'm not going to fall.
I'm not going to fall out.
Just fucking funny shit.
I know. She's chastising people for it. Why don't you do that like a normal person? What I mean? She was funny as shit. And one thing I like about this too is that in a way, there's a man on the wing of the plane. We know there's a man on the wing of the plane. And at the end of the thing, yes, there really was a man on the wing of the plane because they find claw marks and everything like that. But the fact that when they're in the sky and no one believes him, and which in a way you can see why you wouldn't, because he looks like a lunatic and he's acting like a lunatic. But then there's this really great, they did a really great thing where everything, all the shots seem really weird, almost vaguely fisheye. So it's almost you're seeing everything from his point of view. Everybody's peeking over the top of their seat, looking at him. So everything looks a little bit surreal. You know what I mean? And I think that really kind of adds to the creepiness of it or something like that. It's not only just because of the monster, but it's then you have all these people fucking the little girl, and she has the fucking ventriloquist dummy across the thing, NOSMO, again, no smoking, you know what I mean? Yeah. So she's so everyone's kind of chastising him and jumping on him and yelling at him and stuff because they think he's a nutcase, because of course nobody sees the monster but him.
Yeah, we're calling it a monster. It's a gremlin.
It's a gremlin.
And in the original, it was just a man in a chaka suit. An oversized
More chakas.
More chakas. It was
this is chock full of chakas.
It's a man in a damn gorilla suit. His face, it just looked like fucking Bigfoot.
It looked real dumb, yeah. It kind of looked like Bigfoot on the way of the plane.
Bigfoot.
Even though you would think, I thought, and you would even think in the original one, did they want it to be a gremlin? Because a gremlin is you know, from World War One or World War Two or whatever.
World War II.
That was what they said about, when
it's a German thing.
Yeah, when shit went wrong with the planes, it was a gremlin, you know what I mean?
Evil spirits inside of a machine that caused problems.
So when I think of gremlin, maybe it's just because of the Joe Dante movie, when I think of gremlin, I don't think of Chaka or Bigfoot.
I think of
a slimy looking gremlin like the one that's in this one.
When I think of a gremlin, I think of the gremlins in the old Looney Tunes. It's a little bitty man with wings coming out of the side of his head, and a wing on top of his head, and a wing. Remember that one?
Oh, okay.
That's the way a gremlin looked. He was in a little gray suit. Yeah. That's what a gremlin looked like.
If you can't see the visuals, I kind of feel sorry for you.
Wings coming out the side of each head, and a wing coming up off the top. And that was a gremlin.
Yeah, I see. When people say the word gremlin, like I said, it's hard to say because I've, grew up watching fucking the movie Gremlins. But I just feel like the word gremlin sounds more like a little green thing with claws. Not a furry thing that looks like a person.
That's what they had in Central Casting. In
That's what
Central
I mean.
Wardrobe.
What suit do we have that could look like a kind of like a monster?
Well, we have a gorilla suit.
It's a Chaka.
Yeah, the Chaka suit. Go get put that on.
There's a Chaka on the
plane.
Yeah, there's a new t-shirt. There's a Chaka on the wing of the plane.
This version of a gremlin looks kind of like a like the thing from Pumpkinhead, except it's white.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, I like this one. Like, it looks like a person, but it looks like...
a real pale white.
Yeah, it looks like a reptilian, almost like reptilian or fish-like, or it looks kinda like Lovecraftian.
Like a skull.
Kind of.
Like Pumpkinhead.
Yeah, and he's got, like, kind of things like coming out of his, like, almost like dreadlocks or something like that. So it looks like that.
Yeah, he had hair.
He did, yeah. So it looks a lot cooler.
Yeah.
And like you said, he looks like he has a lot more powers because, like, when John Lithgow, like, you know, his eyes bugging out the window and he sees the thing is sitting there, like, throwing shit into the engine and, like, blowing the fucking engine out.
It called a lightning bolt down into the engine.
Yeah, so it's, you know. And it could fly, too, because they showed, like, when it was flying away, like, because the plane was going to land. It was going to crash the plane, presumably. Yeah. But I guess he didn't because he got seen or he didn't have enough time or something.
Yeah, he got too close to the runway. He didn't have time, I guess, to tear the plane apart.
Yeah, so John Lithgow was, like, hanging out the, because, of course, he shoots out the fucking...
And so that was a little bit different. It clearly shows that the protagonist saved the airplane.
He did.
And that it wasn't a hallucination. There was damage there. In the Shat version, it was not clear whether or not
he actually saved. Yeah, I think they left it ambiguous.
It wasn't clear. No, it wasn't clear that him shooting at it saved the airplane.
Saved the airplane.
But it did leave.
Yeah.
And then later when it panned back, it showed the engine, and there was a piece of it fucking pulled back where it was going in there, from, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
In the original. So something was out there on the wing. Trying to damage the engine.
But I did like the end of this, and like I said, I can't remember if this is how the Shat one ended, but at the end of this one...
Carried him out on a stretcher.
They carried him out, and he said, I saved everybody, or something like that. So he did like it, say that he had saved it, but everyone thought he was crazy, because they put him in a fucking straitjacket.
Yeah, I guess so. I think
before
the
they
one,
saw,
I think
like,
the Shat
the
one,
damage.
He was just crazy, like mumbling to himself and fighting the restraint, so they weren't sure.
Yeah.
Or he wasn't sure. I guess.
I also have to say I really always liked the way they brought back the prologue or the wraparound and they incorporated it into the last story because they put John Lithgow in the ambulance and I guess they're taking him to the psychiatric ward or whatever.
Yeah.
And then you hear Dan Aykroyd's voice and he turns around and he's like, hey, want to see something really scary? You know what I mean? Like he's driving the ambulance, which is like a callback to the beginning, which I thought was really, I really liked the way they bookended it like that.
That's also like a shout out to Creepshow.
That too.
You know.
Yeah. Which, although Creepshow, when did that come out? That came out in 83. No, 82. Okay. So that was like the year before this.
Okay, yeah.
All right, so because for a second I was thinking, oh, that came out afterwards.
I think Creepshow was the first of these, and I think Twilight Zone was a response to Creepshow, wasn't it? That's the way I remember it.
I think so, yeah.
That's the way I remembered it.
Yeah, because Creepshow was 82.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was kind of like a big boom in like anthologies.
They never came out with Eerie, with Cousin Eerie, and
they
never came out with Eerie and Creepy. Which they should.
Yeah.
Those two. I remember those two magazines used to trip me out when I was a kid, man. Fucking eerie and creepy. Fuck.
Hey,
they wouldn't allow those today. I don't think
somebody needs to get on that.
They wouldn't allow those today.
Shudder could do it. They did a fucking creep show.
Now I'm talking about those comic books.
Oh,
that caused a lot of problems. They were trying to ban them for kids because they had a lot of adult content in them things. But we could buy them anyway.
Yeah.
You know, there was. I don't think there was cursing in them, but there was pretty much nudity in it and lots of fucking weird violence. Cannibalism.
Yeah, they
shit.
Were really gory.
Yeah, and they had a lot of... the stories were good, though.
The stories were
really good. And they would creep you out when you were a kid. You're like, oh.
You'd be scared.
Yeah, you put it down and you'd have to think about it and recover from it. Yeah. You go back into it and look at it again. Because it's like you were looking at something you weren't supposed to be looking at.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, oh, don't let them see this.
Yeah.
Because it'll take this away from me.
We did okay, though.
Yeah.
Even though we saw all that shit when growing up. But yeah, I feel like the 80s were kind of like... There was a lot of really good horror anthologies that came out. This one, and Creepshow, and fucking Cat's Eye, which we should probably do one of these days. There were even, like, you know, Tales from the Dark Side, although I think that was 1990. we should probably... what was the other one that I was thinking of? There was... Like I said, I think I've mentioned this on the show before, but I think there was one that was called Nightmare or Nightmares. And all I remember... I think it was... three or four stories, and all I remember is that the first one had Emilio Estevez in it, and he was playing a video game called The Bishop of Battle, and it kind of like sucked you into the video game or something. It was kind of like a Tron thing. I haven't seen it in a really long time. I'm going to have to look that fucking movie up again because I haven't seen it in a really... I remember seeing it like a whole bunch of times back because I loved fucking anthology movies, still do. So I saw pretty much every one that they put out. Some of them are better than others. But that was one that kind of stuck. But only the first story stuck with me for some reason.
Bringing up Tron, man. I got to see the original Tron. That was a fucking masterpiece from what I remember.
Yeah, I remember really liking it.
I remember really... And just visually, I remember it being real visually impressive.
Yeah.
Because it was like CG, the very first computer graphics.
One of the first ones, one of the first.
And it was taking place in the computer world. They made a sequel to it. It wasn't bad, but it's hard to capture the time. You know what I mean?
Well, that's true of any...
Right, it's hard to capture what...
movie that came out. It's because it's always like a time capsule of the time that it came out. And if you're going to remake it, it's like, I'm not saying they can't remake things, but it's never going to be exactly the same because it's not the same...
You're never going
to be able... The context around it isn't the same.
Never going to be able to remake Disney's The Black Hole and get that same tone of what it was like to see it in the year that it came out.
Yeah.
You know, it's just not going to happen.
I was just reading about some people like that had seen that in the theater today and talking about how much it scared them.
It was scary for kids.
It was one of the darker
Disney movies. It was very much a vampire movie in outer space, really.
Yeah.
With fucking Count Dracula in his damn fucking spaceship with all his zombies and shit.
Dracula in space.
With his own fucking demonic robot. And it's a... Some people bag on it. You can see wires. I didn't notice any wires in our fucking Blu-ray version of it.
No, I didn't either.
No. It wasn't... Actually, it's not a Blu-ray. It's just a HDD, I think, DVD. And we saw an updated version. We rented an updated version of it. I didn't remember seeing any wires.
Yeah, I didn't either.
Yeah, I think they digitally removed them.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, you would think it's easy to do.
Easy to do now.
But yeah. So if you were into anthology movies and somehow did not see Twilight Zone, the movie from 1983, it's not the best horror anthology of the 80s. And like I said, the first or the second segment is not really horror. But if you're a fan of like the original Twilight Zone series and you like that kind of tone, you like Spielberg shit, you like John Landis's shit, then you definitely need to see this. I definitely think the last two stories are the best ones, but I really like the whole movie. There's something really comforting about it. Like I said, I love that fucking opening prologue with the two of them in the car, like singing all the theme songs and stuff. It's like, I've seen it so many times that I have it fucking memorized and it just like still cracks me up every time. So yeah, this is one of the comforting movies of my youth that I saw like a million times. So thank you very much, Rob, for sending me the DVD of this, because this is something I will probably
watch. It's up there with Creepshow.
Many, many times over and over again.
I'd say it was up there with Creepshow.
Yeah, not quite as horror based. It's more thriller fantasy action. Yeah,
in terms of quality and entertainment, about Creepshow.
Yeah, but I really do love Twilight Zone, the movie. Yeah. And like I said, we should definitely do more anthologies. Okay. We have so many movies on the fucking list that we have to do, though.
Trick or Treat was a good one, too.
Yeah. Did we do that one?
I don't think we did it. We need to do a review of that one, I think.
Maybe we can do that around Halloween.
I thought we did it.
I think we did, too. Because I bought it. Remember? Yeah, I bought it for like $3 or something like that. But yeah, so Twilight Zone, the movie.